This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasoli. How does a Subangjaya boy end up in Greece feeding refugees? Well, this World Refugee Day, I speak to Ryan Harris, the volunteer cook who helped feed thousands of Syrian refugees in the Greek island of Lesbos for years. He joins me now to share his story of leaving almost everything behind to become a backpacker and how he eventually became a volunteer for refugees in process. Welcome to the show, Ryan. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me here. Really appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Ryan, before we go into this, what were your growing up years like? I mean, you grew up in Subangjaya, I understand.
Yes, I did. I grew up in Subangjaya, very modern family. Growing up as a kid in Subangjaya, so it's exciting, you know, all the hip years with Backstreet Boys and stuff. And I think towards my middle school, high school, I went to boarding school. And that's when, I learned how to be, separated from my parents and family. I think that contributes to, me being able to travel for a long time and not, being that homesick that much.
Mm-hmm. And when we were reading, we found that you spoke a lot about your failures in life. Why is that?
I think, people don't really talk about it or people dwell too much on their failure. I mean, the way I want to talk about failure is like I want people to know that despite how many times you fail in life, your failure is not your definite, period. It's a jumping point, You'll do something better. Your failure, every single one of them is a redirection to something better in life. And I want to continue doing that. I want to tell people because a lot of people are telling me that, hey, I'm stuck here. I do not know what to do. I'm not sure if I'm going to come out of it. I just want people to know that you'll be able to come out of it regardless, whatever the thing it is.
Well, may I ask, what were some of the failures that you felt were failures?
In 2012, I got kicked out from university.
Why, right? What did you do?
I was a bad boy.
You said something about the government.
No. Can you imagine that? No, I filled one paper. Yes, it was a government scholarship and they were pretty strict about it. And just like that, I'd realized that things can just change within minutes. Mm-hmm. To me, it was just within days and, it was no longer a student, just because of one paper.
Right.
And then, I dwell for that long period of time, what am I going to do? I have 15 years plan. I have 20 years plan. I'm going to buy a car. I'm going to have a house and everything. And that didn't happen. And then I realized that I could come out of it. And 2 years, 4 years later, here I am.
Yes,
in your studio.
Absolutely. And gastronomy seemed to have resonated with you. You decided to become a cook. How is that?
Actually, when I was at high school, I actually went to technical college. So I did study culinary arts for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows about this. I don't really tell because I went to school for something different. I always love to eat. And I always love to cook. And my mom is an amazing cook. And my grandmother is an amazing cook too. And we're a family of people who love to cook and feed people. And I think that, that surrounding, growing up with that surrounding can influence, me, who I am, someone who loves to cook and feed other people, I guess.
Could you chart that journey from the time you left university over the last 4 years?
When I left university, I had a blog. It was just a personal blog. I was not making money at all. And I started changing a travel blog because, I feel like I have so much stories to tell. And slowly the blog picks up. And by the end of 2012 into 2013, it just went on. Back then there wasn't many travel bloggers and people were just like, hey, this travel blogger. And, I was writing in English and it started picking up. I got a job at Travel Magazine and, go on from there, learning from that process. And I think by the end of 2013, I felt something was missing. I was living a really good life. I was out in and out hotel, high fancy, high class restaurant, in and out of plane or flying everywhere. But it was just something in my soul that wasn't happy, There's something missing. And I went to Langkawi and that's when my life changed completely.
What happened?
I went to a hotel review. I met this lady and I hope she exists. and she told me something about what's going to happen to my life. And she said that you're going to be given a wealth or a property, that's going to change your life. And I realized that what she meant wasn't really a property. It was this journey. And she directed me to Lesi Langkawi, which is the first place I ever volunteered. I promised to stay 2 weeks. I ended up staying for, about 5 months, but going back and forth to that same place. And at the end of 2013, that's when Typhoon Haiyan happened. And my heart was telling me, go. And this is coming from somebody who has no idea about disaster, who's so scared about disaster, you know, who have no experience. And I applied and I got in and it all worked out. You know, money started coming in and I started getting a bit of job here that pays. And 15 December 2013, I arrived in Ormoc, Philippines. Mm-hmm. And that's when I, you know, first experienced the first hand of disaster.
Well, how did you volunteer? What did you do?
So my first disaster response volunteering was with All Hands Volunteer. It's an American-based volunteering agency that started off after the tsunami in Aceh. So I went there as a non-skill volunteer. And basically, we do rubbling, we clear up school, we clear up buildings, we help distribute goods. And from that 1 month, I extended. I ended up staying. The first period that I stayed with them was 7 months. And I jumped from Typhoon Haiyan to Earthquake Bohol. That's when I learned how to build schools and everything. And meeting a lot of people like me who just want to do something. And that was a huge learning process. And I realized I can keep continuing doing this. And I went on. And it's just amazing. And without me realizing, it's been 3 years.
Mm-hmm. You got paid for all of this?
No.
Absolutely. So how did you survive?
Blog.
So you got your blog sponsored.
Yeah, it's amazing that how you can make money online. And some people couldn't believe it, but I did, you know. There was one particular client, I got paid a month's salary for a degree holder for just posting things on social media. And that's a beautiful thing. And for now, I'm a social media consultant with an agency in Malaysia. It's a small agency, very flexible. Huge shout out to them because they were keeping me, you know, my position intact while I was in Greece. And because of that, I was able to survive while doing my job, doing my volunteer job.
Before we move on to Greece, how was it difficult for you to immerse yourself with the local community? Because some people would say charity starts at home. Why did you choose to volunteer abroad?
Well, I actually started in Malaysia. I started in Langkawi. Not many people know that. I think different people have different calling and different journey that the universe set us on this path. And this is my journey, you know. It's not that I don't want to do something in Malaysia. There's amazing people out there in Malaysia doing amazing stuff. It's just that my journey is taking a different route and I'm just following my journey.
So it started with disaster areas. Yeah. And somehow you've sort of landed with championing the refugee status. How did that happen?
Island Kurdi. Back in August when I came back to Malaysia, I was working and I told my boss that, hey, can I work out of Rome, Italy? I want to go study Italian and study cooking. And he said, yeah. So we were planning for that. I was planning for that, you know, to set up our office there. And the photo of Island Kurdi went viral and completely changed my mind. And the moment I saw his photo, I started doing research and knowing there wasn't any help on the island of Kos the first time. And then Lesbos came into picture and then the whole European Union, you know, breaks out with the story. And within 3 weeks, you know, I met people online who was trying to help out online, trying to coordinate stuff. And within 3 weeks, I landed in Lesbos. I landed in Mytilene. It was just a decision that I made quickly. You know, wasn't thinking about helping the refugees at all. It was just like needing to go there and help.
What happened when you landed in the island of Lesbos?
Heartbreaking moments, I tell you. You see thousands and thousands of people walking and I kept asking myself, freaking 2015, we got the latest iPhone. We got people on the ISS, you know, up in the sky floating. And yet we have thousands and thousands of people walking, trying to find safety. What are we doing? You know, I was so angry with myself. I was so angry with the passport that I was holding, you know. It wasn't right. It didn't feel right at all. And then I went to the landing spot and then I realized that this is just, you know, the next phase of their life. They're safe already on ground. They're just walking. The moment they get on that boat from the other side, it was a different story. And that was just as heartbreaking as it was to see people walking.
Describe the landing spot.
It was a beach area. There's a few landing spots. Where I was is called Skala Skamnias. It's a northern of Lesbos. And there's another spot called Molivos and Mathamados. There's a few landing spots. And where I set up myself, it's a small fishing village with maybe more or less 50 or 100 people living there, old people, lovely community. And by the beach area. There's just about a kilometer to a beach area, and where we set out is called Platanos, and that's where we set out our camp and, you know, co-share with other people. It's a solidarity group. I'm glad I met these people because I didn't know where I wanted to, you know, plan myself. And there was a group of people who wanted to leave, and there was a kitchen that left behind. I said, I've been looking for a kitchen, and I need, you know, I want to do this. And from that moment, you know, taking over that, you know, building it up to where it was in January, it was amazing to see how solidarity and support and love from around the world could just build that.
And these refugees were coming from?
Turkey. If you see where we were, you can actually see Turkey. On a really good day, you can see the minaret over the other side. And if you're really, really good binoculars, you see them, you know, being loaded up into those boats. And it's just crazy. It's just, you know, it's how it was so near. It's crazy to think that just crossing the sea is another country, another continent already.
That first experience when you saw the first batch of refugees landing on this spot, I mean, how did that make you feel?
Oh, surprisingly, the first boat that I received was joyous, joyful. People were almost dancing. People were smiling. We were giving kids like chips, croissant and water. And I remember this particular family wanting to take selfie. And I remember this old guy, if my grandfather has been alive, he'd probably be the age of my grandfather. And he was like smiling. And I shook, you know how in Malaysia that you shook your elderly's hand and you kiss it?
Yes.
And I did the same. And he pulled me, and in his very, you know, stuttering voice, say thank you. We're talking about a guy from Middle East who no English, is trying to say thank you, and he kissed my forehead. And I was like, how could this, you know, how could media or people around the world, you know, telling me that these are terrorists? They're not. They're just people like you and me who's trying to find safety.
Mm-hmm. How did you get the kitchen up and going?
So basically, when I arrive, I have 1,000 euros. And then people start coming in, like hearing about what I do, and people just like, do you need anything? And I say, yes, we're running out of money. We need gas, we need cups, we need this and that. And I started working out. And as a social media influencer, I realized that my social media is so powerful. I can just post things online and people could help me. And that's how we kind of get help. I post out videos, I post out stories and say, hey, I need support. We need support. You know, there was one time that we needed a van. And I post out online, and within 5 minutes, someone was like, hey, I have a van. Do you want to take it? You know, that kind of thing is amazing to
me. People in Greece.
People around in Europe, basically.
Right. Okay.
So the connection doesn't only stop in Greece. We have bloggers in Greece, local bloggers who work with brand. She's a food blogger, and she can source out food. And she just came in with boxes of food, which is amazing. You know, people using their connection as best as possible to help.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're discussing Ryan Harris's adventures. He started off well. He claims he was kicked out of university, but, you know, life sort of changed the trajectory in which he was going from there. I mean, he's moved on from being a blogger, a food blogger. You still are a blogger.
I am.
But
a blogger.
It kicked off your sort of income was coming in from there. And then you moved on to volunteering and you love cooking. And so you're a cook. And now you went off to Greece after that to help cook for refugees who landed in this area called Lesvos. And you're back in Malaysia now. You just got back about a month ago. And we'll come back and find out more about your journey after this up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Live and Learn and I am Mira Sivasodi. It's World Refugee Day and it's our special. We happen to have a very interesting individual, Ryan Harris, very young, who's actually gone off to be a volunteer cook in the Greek island of Lesvos, where he worked with refugees. He helped serve them food. What sort of food did you serve them, Ryan? I mean, you didn't have a lot of access to funds. So what did you feed them?
We had soup and tea, very sweet tea, shoruba, that's, you know, the word in Arabic for soup. And we had sandwiches that we made, cheese and spreads. And we had biscuits, we had baby milk. So, you know, we have quite a few options. And towards the second, third month, we had funding to buy fruits, which is amazing. So those kind of things that, you know, help us to kind of go forward.
Mm-hmm. And what happens to these refugees? I mean, you feed them and they're moving on after that, or are they staying in Greece?
Yeah, so where we were in Skalas Kamnias, it's just a transit area. I wouldn't even call it a camp, you know, because the real camp that they had to go is called Moria, which is 60 kilometers away. So what they do is that when they land, they get changed. They're usually wet, drenched in seawater. So we give them new clothing, new shoes, and you know, some supplies. They get to eat a bit, and they will have to walk 2 kilometers to the bus station, and that's when the UNHCR bus is waiting for them. If they're vulnerable, if they're sick, they get to stay in that camp at the stage 2, and they will be ferried to Moria. At Moria, they will have to queue up for hours, for days, to actually get a paper that allows them to stay. It's like remain to leave, mm-hmm. stay kind of thing. I'm not really sure about the term, but they get a paper that allows them to move freely. Before they get this paper, they cannot even use the, I know, everything and anything in Europe. You know, they can't even take a cab. So having this paper allows them to do that. So after that, they will take a ferry for 12 hours to go to Athens. And from Athens, they continue the journey to whatever country they want to resettle.
Mm-hmm. And do any of them, well, it's I suppose many of them are happy because they're away. They're fleeing the Syrian civil war, am I correct?
Yes, so I want to correct the perception here. It's not only Syrian refugee. Yes, the Syrian refugee crisis is, you know, voluming up the refugees arriving in Greece and around the region. But there's a lot of the refugees that I think we overlook. There's people from Iraq. There's people from Afghanistan. People are basically persecuting, you know, war. I think there's different type of refugees too. Not only war refugees, there's sexuality refugees. There are, you know, there's just so many type of refugees. It's just, you know, I met so many people who ran away for a very different reason.
Do you have a lot of time to have conversations with them?
A lot of time, no. When there's like a few hundred people by the beach, we just want to go and go. But there are times where you can actually sit down and get to know them or give them a hug. Mm-hmm. And I have so many memories in life that, you know, my journey that have taught me. And I remember them in my thoughts.
Sometimes when you think of refugees, or not sometimes, well, most all the time, for me at least, you think of them being in distress. They've been through a long journey. It's horrifying. Did that affect you emotionally?
It did, you know. It kept make you think, like, why and how did you let this happen, you know? You almost kind of, like, blame yourself for having that privilege. And there was a lot of, you know, psychiatrists and counselors who work day in, day out to not only talk to refugees but talk to us volunteers, you know, reminding us that, you know, this is not our fault per se, and it is okay to have privilege, and because of our privilege, you know, we're able to help them. And I remember one counselor, I was talking to her when we were going to get more supplies in the car, and I think I told her that I was so angry. I have this red passport that allows me to travel around the world, and yet these people can't even get on a plane, having to go through this. And she said, you know, Ryan, that's the reason why we're here, you know. That's the reason why you go through this journey, why they have to go through this journey, and your life intertwines. And it's just that journey, you know, you just have to learn from each other. There's something that they have to learn from you. There's something that you have to learn from them. And it's just a learning process, and we do what we can to make each other comfortable in this world.
Who looked after your emotional needs?
I think that's a beautiful thing about being among volunteers. The Greek volunteers are amazing. There's so, you know, there's a lot of international volunteers that are also amazing. And that's what I love about that community itself, you know, people looking after each other. I remember there was a very mentally unstable guy, a local guy in Greece. I was sitting trying to have dinner, and he came to me and saying things about, oh, you're giving food. And I remember his word was that, you be careful. And for some reason, I freak out. Like, what do you mean I have to be careful? And I remember going back to the camp, because usually you come back at night. You know, I have no worries walking in the dark. But that week, I was so worried, you know. I was just like, is this guy for real mentally unstable? He meant it. And I went to the camp, like, hey, I probably got trapped in just now. And this people just got into the action mode. And it's like, tell us this guy, we're going to go talk to him. And they went. They went talk to this guy. And he said, no worries. And then, you know, you're okay. And for that week, they were just walking me, you know, back and forth to wherever I want to go. And that's the most beautiful thing. They don't have to do it. I'm an adult, considered an adult. But these people you know, took it upon them. Like it's just a family oriented situation.
Other volunteers.
Yeah, the other volunteers, you know.
How many did you work with?
So many.
Yeah. Mm.
So many. I have so many moms around the world now. So many sisters around the world. It's amazing.
It's always a nice feeling, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Always good to know that you have family across the world.
Yeah. So volunteering has changed your life?
Yes. It has. It makes me, you know, appreciate little things in life. Makes me more grateful with every single thing I have. And I'm appreciating every single tiny thing. It makes me more excited to live a life. It tells me that, you know, if other people can do it, I can do it too.
Refugees, just the word refugees, has a very negative connotation today. Often very politically linked, so on and so forth. Societies are sometimes unwilling to accept these refugees. What would you say to them?
I think the stigma is still there, right? We have to, like, remove this. If we remove refugees or remove any labels out anyone, it just goes down to human being, you know. We're so lucky that we don't even realize that right now, you and I, we're sitting in this beautiful studio. That's a beautiful weather out there. That's no bomb dropping on us. That, to my friend out there, that's privilege for us. And that's not a privilege that they have. And remembering that, you know, these people are just like you and me. For all you know, the next couple of months, we could go into war and we could be refugees too. And it could be them opening their arms for us.
Yeah. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. No, yeah. Not happening.
No, not happening, no. Burnout and disillusionment would have been part of that process. There's only so much you can take emotionally. Is that why you're back in Malaysia?
I think a lot of us face that thing. Having doing it for 3 years, not only Greece, you know, doing the things, seeing things, you know, being trapped in Nepal earthquake even. You know, I was in Nepal when that happened. That feeling of, you know, scare, insecurity and everything. Coming back to Malaysia was to see my parents, knowing that I will continue my journey. And it was just like, I need to come back. Moving forward, you know, I probably won't do major stuff yet. Taking a year off, I think it's good to recharge, talking to people, you know, seeing things from different perspective again.
How are you recharging here in Malaysia?
Oh, food.
It's hard. Catching up on the food.
I know. Oh, my God. The access to food here is amazing. I don't have to travel to another country in Europe to get nasi lemak. You can just walk outside and get it for a ringgit instead of like 12 pounds. You know, it's amazing to be back to a country that, you know, you fondly remember it for food.
Sure. Are you going to do much volunteering work here?
A bit here and there. Not much. Because I think pulling myself away from that is good. For a bit, yeah. You know.
After all, you want to have that break.
Yes, yes, definitely. I mean, not to say that I'm just going to start volunteering. That's not me. For all you know, after this conversation, then the earthquake hits somewhere and I'll be on the next plane out, yeah. You know. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if anyone's listening and they are volunteers, it is okay to take breaks. It is okay to rest, you know. You don't have to justify it to anyone.
Did you get flack for the work that you do?
Always. People don't understand. Some people were just like, why are you not doing it in Malaysia? Or why are you doing this? You know, helping terrorists and stuff. And I think I used to want to justify to people why I do it. I used to answer people. And I learned a lesson that, you know, people will just always have this negativity towards you, regardless whatever you do. I mean, as a career itself, as a social media influencer, people were just, you know, playing around my body weight, about how I able to do stuff, and, you know, working with this and that, you know. It's just, to me, I'm a kind of person, if you're going to use bad words and you're going to say bad things about me, goodbye. I just don't want to tolerate hate because it fills up me, you know. It fills me with anger and frustration, and I don't want that, you know.
Do you think the media has played a role in fueling this sentiment, or has the media helped to a large extent
for the refugee
to encourage your mission?
Media has been nice about encouraging my mission, but on refugee crisis itself, like you say, it's been politicized a lot, and there's obviously newspaper that have to take sides and stuff. And I think in terms of work, it has helped amazingly. Obviously, there are some bad actions about, you know, why are you helping these people? But to me, as long as I know what I'm doing, as long as my parents know what I'm doing, and as long as people who care about me and people I care for know what I'm doing is right, I would say just keep continuing doing it. You know, you don't have to justify it to anyone. And go on.
So you get to cook for us?
Yeah, come to
tea
one
and
of
soup.
The come to one of the cooking sessions, and definitely having a cooking session again soon in Malaysia.
You had one before?
I had one before.
Okay, what was that all about?
That was a new campaign that I started with my social media. It's called My Love Letter to You and Me. And it was a talk at the Pit Stop Cafe, Community Cafe in KL. Mm-hmm. It's run by Joyce. They co-found that place. It's a space for homeless and urban poor to go and eat and have a place, you know, they can be back in community. I love that place.
Like a soup kitchen?
It's like soup kitchen, but totally different. It's like more dignified, you know, like people, you know, feel like they're actually eating in a proper restaurant. Not really proper, like a shop, you know, you see like any other people. That's no difference. Mm-hmm.
Except for they just come and get their food from there.
Exactly.
It is World Refugee Day. What's your message?
Appreciate that we have the safety, and because that of your appreciation, remember that we have the privilege to help other people. You know, maybe you're scared with the stigma, but educate yourself. You know, educate yourself with what is really refugees. You know? What you can do to help other people out there, and remember that refugees are just human beings like you and I. Mm-hmm. The only thing they're looking is for that safety that they don't have.
If that's one thing the public could do to support refugees, what would that be?
I think talking about it on the social media, you know, telling the world that this is happening, that we cannot ignore it. If, you know, if I get this clearly, that's over 66 million people who are displaced internally and externally. I know. Support, refugee support group. One particularly I really love that people to support is called CEO Solidarity. It's based in America, run by Maria Tran and Adam Rosa. They started a kitchen from helping us, the volunteer cook in Greece. Go read their story and go support them. They're doing an amazing job. Even in Malaysia, there's a lot of refugee support group. You know, join them. Go experience yourself and understand who are refugees and what do they want in life.
How do we get in touch with you?
You can go on my Facebook, Ryan Harris, RayanHarries. You can Google me. You'll find my social media. Follow me. Say hi. And I'll say hi back to you.
It was great catching up with you, Ryan. And all the best. Take that 1 year off. Recoup and we'll see where you go after this.
We'll never know.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Ryan Harris, a volunteer cook. Had a very interesting story and journey to share with us this World Refugee Day on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.